Ron Scallon is a linguist at the Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. One of his primary areas of interest is inter-ethnic communication, how people of one ethnic group communicate with people from another. The way people speak to each other, says Scallon, involves a lot more than just talking.
It involves body placement, clothing styles, movement, gesture, a whole lot of things besides just speaking styles.
Is there a variance in the entire language style from village to village, or is it more from, say, culture area to culture area?
I think there's big differences from village to village. Within villages, there's big differences. Many people find it very easy on listening to a tape recording of somebody to tell just where they come from, even if they haven't met them yet.
According to Scallon, in some areas, people are looking inward and finding a sense of self reflected in a reawakened sense of place.
In some areas, I think people are working at finding a self-definition or a place definition. They're looking back into their own histories and seeing themselves as being unique and being very concerned with preserving that uniqueness. In other areas, people are not so strongly concerned with that, and people are more concerned with developing the ability to communicate across different areas. And of course, some places, the ones that I treat as sort of ideal, are trying to keep a sense of uniqueness in place while being able to communicate with other groups from other places. We find when we talk about questions of communication, whenever we make a statement that's sort of broad, general, it covers all of one group of people, people will object very quickly and will say, that may be true for some people, but it's not true for us because we're quite different. And I think people really value that sense of being different.
The degree of contact with outsiders has a big effect.
Say someplace like Eagle, where people have lived on the river and have had communication with all of the people coming up and down the river from Canada as well as Alaska. It's very different from just south of there along the Upper Tanana, where people have not had that kind of communication until recently. So the differences you get are accentuated by the length of the contact people have had with other people.
One aspect of that contact is the school system. There's another dynamic in effect here.
There's several things to remember. Everyone who speaks from some point of view. You speak from the point of view of the group you come from, and much of what you say will reflect the group that you come from. Another thing to remember is the classroom is a world in and of itself. In any culture, the classroom is a very different world, and the dynamics of the classroom have to be worked out between the teaching personnel, the administrative staff, the students, and the community. And practically every community works that out in a different way. I would say that it's important for teachers, particularly ones who come from outside the community, to be aware that they're going to be dealing with something very different. Many of us assume that the schools that we teach in will be the same as the ones we grew up in. And if we make that mistake, it's very easy to mistake the communication of the students in the school.
One potential area for a breakdown in communications between student and teacher involves the learning style of the child.
In bush communities, in bush schools, the children have learned to learn in a way that involves a lot of observation, a lot of careful paying attention to experts, to adults, to elders. Children have become very good listeners. They're very adept at that. They're very good observers. And there's a tendency for them to expect the teacher to show what the teacher is very good at and the student to learn from it. Now, in the general American education system, we expect students to learn, of course, but to show what they've learned. And so we have a lot of tests and a lot of methods of evaluation, which, of course, are very important for education. But it requires the student to show off knowledge in a way that's very uncomfortable sometimes for Native students. Native students prefer to find a situation in which they can use their knowledge rather than showing it off out of context. So sometimes there's a problem there where teachers are expecting children to show their knowledge, display their knowledge, and students are expecting the teacher to display the knowledge.
The situation changes when the teacher comes from the community in which they are teaching. The usual state of affairs for the lower 48, but still uncommon in village Alaska.
The teacher who comes from the same community understands what kind of point of view the children are bringing to learning. And of course, the teacher's probably been educated in the American Western educational system and may have some of those same expectations.
There are expectations in social interactions as well.
Non-natives use talking as a way of getting to know people. We see talking as the easiest way to sort of soothe our way into a new relationship, particularly dealing with strangers, but even with people we know well, we use talk as a way of getting to know people. Many native people would prefer to observe somebody for a while and get to know them by watching their actions, their behavior, and how they get along. And then once they know somebody, they can feel quite comfortable talking to them. So sometimes you get this sort of situation in a visit, this has happened to me and to many other people, where people are not doing a lot of talking, and you get the sense that something's going wrong, when in fact nothing's going wrong at all. People are getting along very well. It's just we sense a need for a lot of talk, and many Native people feel that silence or just being with somebody is more important than actually saying anything at the time. So it can cause some problem in communicating.
People who travel frequently experience communications breakdowns, sometimes from not speaking the language, other times from not knowing the customs and inadvertently committing a faux pas. According to linguist Ron Scallon, based on his experiences in Alaska, a foreign language can be your own when somebody else is speaking it. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. I've just met the world's, the universe's 22nd UFO folk singer, a man named Alaska Jack 22. That's what it says on his Alaska driver's license. He's in town campaigning for an independent, unfiled candidate for president named Love 22. Alaska Jack spells his name J-A-C-K-K, so that using his ABC key, the letters add up to 9, the number, he says, for love. 22 is the master number of the secrets of the universe in the Aquarian age. After handing me a $22 bill with Love's picture on it, where you'd expect to find a past president, AJ, as he's called, talked about himself and his candidate.
We say that Love is a shoo-in for president. He's not really running. He's on the beach right now playing Frisbee in Florida, taking it easy. Love 22 is the independent candidate for president of the United States. And as part of his campaign gimmick, he has printed up $22 bills and is handing them out and selling them for campaign donations of 22 cents each or 5 for a dollar or whatnot.
Now, what is the significance of 22?
Okay, 22 is the magical, mystical number of the Aquarian age.
And how do you know this?
God told me.
You talk with him?
Yeah.
Her? It? Her?
Whatever you want to call it. He, she, it. That's God.
And God communicates with you?
For sure.
All right. And God told you that 22 is the number?
Right. Of the Aquarian age. He said that the last revelation in the Bible is revelation number
22.
22. But it's not religious. We're spiritual. S-S-P-I-R-I-T-U-A-L. I spell it with two S's, which adds down to 9. 9 being the number for love. 22 being the number for the man upstairs, how he gets things done.
Okay, now let me ask you about that. You said you spell spiritual with two S's so it adds up to 9. So you're changing it so that it adds up.
Oh, yeah. We change words. Like we spell fish, F-Y-S-H. There were 22 original letters to the Hebrew alphabet, believe it or not, and there's 22 letters to the United States government. Now, the interchanging letters, which Love 22 came up with, is the I and the Y, like fish, F-Y-S-H, 22.
Yeah.
The K and C, coin, K-O-I-N-E. The S and the Z, I'm handing out these bucks, B-U-C-K-Z, which adds down to 9, which is love.
Why do you do
and
that,
the
though?
J and the G, we're in the new age, all right? N-E-W-A-J-E adds up to 22 on this chart. Why do I do it?
Yeah.
Because we're going to vibe our writing with God and the universe.
So you change words so that they add up to either 9 or 22.
Or the combination.
A combination refers to any word whose parts add up to 22s. AJ used independence as an example for such a word, which, using the ABC key on the $22 bill he gave me, adds up to 62, two 22s and two 9s, without changing the spelling. Unlike the spelling of his name on his Alaska driver's license. Alaska, incidentally, adds up to the number for love, 9.
I notice you spell your name J-A-C-K-K.
Right.
Now, why not instead pick a name, since you changed your name legally, that already added up to 9 or 22, rather than change the spelling?
I had the name Alaska Jack before I met Love 22. He gave me the extra K and the number 22, all right? Alaska Jack was given to me by God, all right? I had that name, and I didn't know if it was going to stick or not, but it has stuck. And the extra K and the 22, if I add up Alaska and Jack and 2 and 2, I would get 22 on this chart.
Okay, now, why do you call yourself Alaska Jack?
Well, God called me that.
Okay, excuse my ignorance, but...
Why did he call me that?
No, how did this happen? How did this happen to you that God gave you this name or communicated these things to you?
I don't know.
I mean, was it, you know, some sort of rush, you know, and suddenly, you know, you went, Eureka.
Oh, okay.
I've had this
communication. I first understood what I was doing on this planet, because ever since I was born, I was saying, hey, God, what the hell am I doing on this planet Earth? I mean, all of it is sacred and pure, except the mind of man. The greatest enemy is man himself. Of man is man, in his mind. And mind, M is 4, I is 9, N is 5, and D is 4. Mind adds up to 22. So not until I met Love 22 did I know my purpose in life, which was to play my guitar and hand out $22 bills.
Did you just meet him recently?
I met him in 1977 on April Fool's at the University of Arizona in Tucson. When I met him, I had a revelation about this chart that I did know this person in other lifetimes, in many different lifetimes, and that we're playing another game in this lifetime, but it's for all the marbles, all right? It's for all the marbles. And it's nice to be here. It's nice to hand out $22 bills because, frankly, I've been waiting over 5,000 years for this moment.
And this feels right to you?
Oh, it feels so right that it'll never be righter. If I had to live my life again, all right? God said, okay, you can live it again and choose any way you want to be. I wouldn't choose any other way than what it's turning out right now.
Let's get back to Love 22. Now,
all right.
He's running for president,
right?
What's his platform?
Okay, his platform is no nukes, no dollars, and no wars. Free food, free cloth, and free rents. Food, cloth, and rents. Those words add up to 22.
They got him, right?
All right.
All right.
Now, about guns, we don't want to make them anymore. We're against guns, totally.
And what are they
any
up
sort
to?
Of violence we're against, even against the animals.
Guns, incidentally, adds up to 16, not a special number by Love's scheme. But another part of Love 22's platform concerns our traditional un-Aquarian spelling. He's also going to revolutionize that. How's he going to accomplish this stuff, the free food, the cloth?
Okay,
the,
now
that
comes
stuff.
Back to me. I'm the world's, not even the world's, I'm the universe's. And this is my eternal claim that I'm this universe's 22nd UFO folk singer.
Now, what is that?
Well, I'm related to some of these guys on these other planets. We're eternal God brothers, all right? Now, these guys are hanging out on these planets just waiting for the right time. And in 1982, when 9 planets line up, 9 being the number for love, it's going to be about the right time.
And right. What's going to happen with you then?
Well, let me tell you something for a minute. Project Blue Book investigated UFOs for how many years?
Got to be 9 or 22.
22 years. And this percentages of unknowns hovers right around 22%. And on this chart, saucer adds up to, 22. So that's why I'm going to play my song, Did You Ever See a UFO? And believe me, I've seen a couple in Florida. Did you ever see a UFO flying in the sky with a red sun fiery glow? How they come and go, no one knows. Oh, how I love them friendly UFOs. I went camping at night by a big mountain stream, McKinley, where up from the water came a strange metallic gleam. It shot into the sky so fast, so high. I guess it went back to that great by and by.
did you ever see a UFO?
Well, I did.
Shining in the sky with a white sun, fiery glow.
How they come and go,
no one knows. Oh, I love them friendly UFOs. I got this feeling deep down in my soul, Karen, that we all came from that first UFO. Oh, when he first landed, no one knows. But the evidence is there from thousands of years ago. Go. Did you ever see a UFO?
Well, I did. Flying in the sky with a blue sun, fiery glow.
How did it come and go? No one knows. Oh, I love them friendly UFOs.
And remember, a vote for love is a vote for you. Yabba dabba dabba do. Yabba dab adds up to 22, and a do, A-D-I-E-U, adds up to 22.
Alaska Jack, 22. The world's 22nd UFO folk singer and campaigner for independent presidential candidate Love 22. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks, and Fairbanks adds up to 36, four times the number for love.
Everything you ever wanted to know about petrochemicals but were afraid to ask.
What's a petrochemical?
Petrochemicals, in its most basic definition, is the refined products of either oil or gas. And that covers a very, very wide area. So you can say gasoline is a petrochemical product in itself. So it's something you do downstream or as a first or second stage process with oil or gas. Now, usually that's separated into the refined energy products, heating oil and gasoline and things of this nature. And then the other spectrum that you make the plastics out of and the pharmaceuticals and all of those things. So that's petrochemicals. Generally, it's anything you do to oil and gas in a lay term could be considered a petrochemical.
Now, where do we get the oil and gas?
Well, you get it out of the ground is where you get the oil and gas. Obviously, from an Alaskan standpoint, from an interior standpoint, we are most concerned with the production from Prudhoe Bay, obviously.
Now, there's oil and there's gas, both leading to petrochemicals.
That's correct.
We get gas as a result of oil development?
No, not necessarily. You can have natural gas independent of oil. For example, in the Cook Inlet, the people in Anchorage fuel their homes with natural gas. Most of the people in the lower 48 have natural gas as an energy source for their homes. And that is either associated with or not associated with oil. In Kenai, it's non-associated with oil. In Prudhoe Bay, it is associated with oil. And therefore, we get the different compositions in the gas.
Well, here, we're talking a lot about gas lines.
That's correct.
We talk about liquid gases. We talk about dry gases.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't those contradictions in terms?
No, not necessarily. In the reservoir, in the ground, it all exists in one state, depending on the pressure and temperature. As it comes to the surface, it will tend to separate into its various components. Now, dry gas is that gas called methane gas, and it's made from anything that deteriorates. You can make methane gas from a sewer plant. You can make methane gas from cow manure, and there's a lot of places do that. So anything that deteriorates. When you see a dump site burning, it's burning because there's methane gas in it. So anything that deteriorates from a natural state forms methane gas. Now, the gas stream, the total stream from Prudhoe Bay, because it is associated with oil, has other components in it. And those are what's generally referred to as the natural gas liquids.
And what are some of those liquids?
Ethane, propane, butane, things people are familiar with, not necessarily ethane, but propane and butane they're generally familiar with.
Uh-huh. Now, when we talk about a gas line, what line are we talking about?
We're generally talking about the large 48-inch gas line that will carry all of the dry gas and various levels of those natural gas liquids, depending upon the size and pressure and temperature. They're all sensitive to that. They will exist in a vapor form, and maybe I should just go back one step. If you were to cut open the inside of a gas line and look at it, would be much like ice fog. That's what it would look like. It's a vapor form.
So it is a gas.
Yeah, it is a gas. And in that vapor form, all of these constituents exist. Now, as you would alter the pressure and temperature, some of the heavier constituents would start to drop out in a liquid form, much like happens with ice fog when the temperature changes. So it's the same concept. They exist in the total gas stream in a vapor form, and then they would be separated by pressure and temperature.
Okay, now, is there a point at which they are separated physically?
Yes. That's what the conditioning and or processing plant would do. Two things, and that terms get mixed around, and we should deal with them independently. The conditioning facility is that facility that would remove the water and the CO2. It just happens that the Prudhoe Bay gas is very, very high in carbon dioxide. That is not usually the case, but it is very, very high in carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is an inert gas. It doesn't burn. You're not going to move it 4,800 miles to put in somebody's furnace. So they would be separated. Then the line would contain methane, ethane, propane, butane, pentane in various degrees. At some other point, you would then process this and remove those natural gas liquids, and a dry gas stream would continue on down.
How does this happen physically? Is there an actual point that there's a pipeline coming off of a pipeline?
No, it goes through a plant, just like an oil line with a refinery on it. Uh-huh. The oil goes through the refinery, and some products are taken off, and the rest of the oil continues on downstream. The exact same thing would happen in a gas line.
Dry gas, methane.
Uh-huh.
What would that be used for?
Heating. It's generally a heating fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it does have a petrochemical value. Two products are made from that. The urea, the fertilizer that you use, and methanol, which is the constituent that many people are now talking about in gasohol. So it's the liquid form of natural gas that is used as a fuel expander. And that is probably one of the most viable petrochemical industries that the state of Alaska could ever get into.
Now, you mentioned gas liquids. Propane is one of them.
Right.
I assume they're not all used for heating applications.
No, that's correct. There's such a tremendous quantity in the line, they couldn't all be used in Alaska as heating. But they have great export value as heating constituents out of the gas line. See, the propane in the gas line only has a BTU value of the gas line. It's a total stream, and it's used for heating. In other words, as a unit of measurement, you would measure the BTU content of the gas stream, and it's paid for accordingly. If you take and separate the propane out, its value out of the gas line is about 3.5 times as much as it is in the gas line, because it's now a segregated heating fuel that is transportable and has a very high value in and of itself.
The price of the gas for Prudhoe Bay,
mm-hmm,
is fixed.
$1.45 per 1,000 cubic feet, or per million BTUs, whichever one. It's a control price with some escalators for inflation. I think today, if it were to start to flow, it would be about $1.70, given the point of time at which it started as $1.45 and the escalators that have been allowed. It has an inflationary escalator allowed with it.
Okay, now we're talking, when we say that, we're talking about The whole
gas stream.
Okay.
Right.
We're not saying the dry gas is worth this and the liquids are worth that. That's
a total
thing.
But they have, that's what I'm saying, once you separate them, they have a much greater value. For Alaskans, an analogy might be, you can say gold, but we all realize that nuggets are worth more than dust. But when somebody quotes the price of gold, they're quoting the price of dust, really, of a bar gold. But you wouldn't sell nuggets for the same price you would sell dust. And that's the same thing. The natural gas liquids would be analogous to the nuggets. They are worth much more, even though in a general sense you'd refer to them as part of the gas stream. I think the important thing for people to understand is that when we are talking about a gas line, the fact that it is a complex makeup of products, not a simply just dry gas that somebody might be familiar with turning the valve on and heating their home. The propane that they also heat their home with is part of that. And the ethane that most of their plastics that they look at, if they're listening to us on a transistor radio, the case that radio is in was natural gas at one time. And it's been reformed and reshaped into a molecule that you can make plastic out of. All of that exists in the gas stream itself.
That's Bob Dempsey, instructor in petroleum technology at the University of Alaska. Now, as Lily Tomlin reminds us, we are, after all, in danger of losing our unnatural resources.
Most of us are aware of our diminishing supply of natural resources. But did you know we are also running short on unnatural resources? Until recently, I, like so many of you, thought that surely there was enough plastic in the world to go around. Apparently, this is not true. You hear all this talk about saving trees. Well, trees can be grown. With plastics, you have to start from scratch. Some of you may be saying, is this a real crisis or just something the plastics industry trumped up to raise the price of plastics? Well, I am sorry to be the one to tell you that this is a genuine synthetic crisis. If something isn't done, there could be a panic on plastics. Vinyl leopard skin will become an endangered synthetic. Greedy people will be hoarding things like baggies, rain bonnets, shower curtains, astroturf, spatulas, plastic toothpicks, parcheesi dice, and leisure suits. Tupperware parties will have to be shut down. Studies show that over two-thirds of game show gift items are made of some form of plastic. Let's make a deal, and one game show alone uses more plastic than the entire country of India has ever seen. If we don't stop squandering and start conserving our unnatural resources, there will be an end to civilization as we know it.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.